Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to CAGDU, about your dog and you. CAGDU stands for Castle Area Guide Dog Users Inc. And I am your host, Broadwin Radio Ray Razor, and my co-host is Mr. Charlie Crawford. How are you today, Charlie?
Rough.
Well, I tell
that was
you,
my dog.
Okay. Well, how have your week been? How have your week been, Charlie? I know you was recuperating, and I hope you're doing well. Our listening audience certainly have missed you. So are you pretty much back up on your feet and running around and all that kind of thing?
Well, let's just say we're trying, and, you know, we're getting somewhere. I don't know where, but we're getting there.
Well, you know, Charlie, I know you on the phone a lot, but I'm telling you, with this virus, being stuck in the house, you know, I work for a councilman, a Prince George County councilman at large, Mr. Calvin Hawkins, and I am a constituent service specialist. And one of the amenities is that they give me a county phone. That's one of the amenities. So when I was out in the field, you know, people called me and they couldn't reach me, and I had to get back to them, and you know, and all that kind of thing, because I was at a meeting. But now, since I'm at home, I feel like a target. I mean, like, pick that phone up. I know you there. Where else can you be? You know what I mean? So I'm sure you and our special guest that's going to come on, I think we spend more time on the phone and working twice as much as we did before this pandemic. I mean, because I can be on the phone any time from 8 in the morning a.m. to 8 at night, 9 at night, you know, with Zoom calls and stuff. And I'm sure you're on a lot of those calls, right, Charlie? Did we lose Charlie?
Oh, I hope not. Let's see. I think we may have.
Okay, well, he'll be
okay,
he'll be
Charlie
back.
Is back on. Yeah, he's back
I'm
on.
I'm back on.
Okay, Charlie, so I was asking, Charlie, are you finding it that you on the telephone where you usually on the phone anyway, but with this Zoom meeting, I mean, are you spending a lot of time on meetings on the phone?
I just got off a Zoom meeting before this one.
And then you schedule to jump on another one right at 4 after this one, right?
Never a dull moment.
Yeah. So I told my boss in a Zoom staff meeting that he might pay me for certain hours, but he owns me, because when you're working for the public, you are never off the clock. I mean, people problems don't. It's not between 9 and 5 or 8 and 4. People problems when you're working for the public, their problems is all around the clock, and that's just part of being a public servant. But we're going to say hello to our hostess with the mostest, Miss Renee, and she is going to give us our lineup for today.
I am indeed, and Charlie, it is good to have you back in your chair. I told all the substitute guests that their seats had wheels on them for a reason. Charlie insisted that they have that so you can roll right out of the way when he gets back. So it is good to have you back. Our show lineup today is Stop Dogging Us Around, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Using a Dog Guide. And in our second half, we'll peer into Charlie's Corner. And finally, you challenge us in your call to action. Our special guest is Deb Cook Lewis, who wears many hats. There is her VP of GDUI, Guide Dog Users International hat, and her ACB Radio host hat. and her Guide Dogs for the Blind alumni board member hat. And today she dons her guest hat instead of a host hat. So we welcome you to CAGD, Deb.
Oh, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Oh, wow. We're going to be on a lot of scrutiny, though, today, huh? Say, ready. Okay. So we're going to okay. Well, okay. So we like to start the show with Stop Dogging Us Around, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, using a guide dog. And, you know, and for me, Charlie, I heard I was up early this morning listening to Mainstream. And that's one of the stations, one of the networks that ACB Radio has, and they have three, the Cafe, they might have renamed it. I know they're doing some new good things, and they have Mainstream, and they have a Treasure Trove. So I'm up listening, and I heard a rebroadcast of our special guest interviewing a gentleman named Anthony. And speaking of the good, the bad, and the ugly using a guide dog, it took me back from what Anthony said. And I'm on my seventh dog that I just got last September, 10 months ago, almost a year ago, and my first dog I got in June of 1971. But and her interview with Anthony, it took me back to June of 1971, when I went and got my first dog, and what he said about how it so changed his life, it really took me back to how it did change my life. I mean, I was right there back with him there when he took me there in the interview, because I remember the caliber of people that I met, and as he shared all these services and all these networks that he didn't know about, I had no idea. Dude showed me a Braille and Speak. He said, "You have a Braille and Speak." I said, "Braille and Speak? What Braille speaks?" And I didn't know it was a machine. He showed me that. And there was a number of things. So I really took me back, and I know from that day on, all the classes I had, matter of fact, one of this recent class, a young lady I met that she's blind, and she's out of Philadelphia, and she writes children books. So just the caliber of people that you meet, and it just made me, after, you know, listening to doing the broadcast, just go back and think about just all the blessings of having a guide dog, and just how it so changed my life, and, you know, just made me so appreciate that. I mean, even being married and having a beautiful wife like Renee, I even leaned over and kissed her and patted her, and I can stay with Pat for at least my wife. I pat the dog enough, but I would just appreciation of that, and I really, really appreciated that I woke up to listening to that, and it just sort of set my day. But it also just made me realize just how blessed. But you know, man, Charlie, I know you on your, I forgot what number dog. You on what number dog? You on Charlie?
Number nine.
Nine.
Yeah, okay, the magic number. Okay, and so you know when we had these dogs for a while, we sort of started taking, you know, things for granted and stuff. But I'm telling you, listening to that broadcast has really, again, have, you know, reconfirmed to me just how blessed. And as he said, he had applied to three schools, and I think, you know, they told him, you know. You have to see if you're going to qualify in that. And we know it's not that easy to get guide dogs. But here again, you know, I realize how blessed I was to be able to get a dog. And I know in the black community, we have a different relationship with dogs. and we're just not that many black persons get guide dogs. And that's one of my jobs when I worked for CNI as a field rep for a couple of years, was to go out into the black community and go to black churches and organizations and stuff and talk about black folks with guide dogs. But I'm just so appreciative just how that had so got my life. And I'm glad we came to this circle back around to be able to have CAG do about your dog and you, to talk to folks about, how having a guide dog has helped to assist them in being able to do the things that you do. But like you said, when I put my hand on that harness and I was like, Boy, ready to go, ready to go. So Charlie, you share with me when you got your first guide dog. What was your impression? Or just your feeling?
Well, I grew up watching Rin Tin Tin and Lassie and the King from Sergeant Preston. So my idea of a dog was a good friend to have and someone to pal around with. So I got a dog, and then I got to the seeing eye, and the instructor said, well, we're going to go on a Juno walk, so you can throw away the cane now. You won't need that anymore. I said, what? this is something I relied upon for a year to get around. So I did. And he took me outside. He said, okay, take this harness. He took me on a Juno walk. And all of a sudden, I started moving forward, and it wasn't on my own volition. and I said, well, what's this? And he said, this is a speed. You like this speed? Oh, yeah, I love this speed. Well, all right, so then I got the dog, and the dog was the same speed. And it was like going from a Volkswagen to a Mercedes-Benz. All of a sudden, my life was very different, and I've never looked back.
It is so rewarding. I'm glad we're able to give back with sharing these experiences. And as you said, and that's one of the things about Treasure Trove, the network that ACB have, they have King, Klondike King, and Sergeant Preston, one of my favorite shows. Let's move on. So, and this segment is brought to you by a new sponsor. It's called Real Time Pain Relief, because one thing about persons have guide dogs, even though the cane, we're not banging or walking in the trees and all that kind of stuff, or stepping down on a curb that we thought was 2 inches, and now we find out it's a foot. And flipping over and that kind of thing. So we always banging our shin or hitting our elbow. So real-time pain relief that we started using, they became a sponsor. And our little thing is a real-time pain relief, the best smelling, most effective real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on, and the pain is gone. So we thank them for being a sponsor. Now, Ms. Renee, would you be kind enough to reintroduce our special guest?
I would be delighted. Our special guest is Deb Cook-Lewis, who wears many hats, and today she dons her guest hat instead of her host hat. So we welcome her to CAGDU Radio. Deb, I'm turning you over to the guys.
Uh-oh. All right.
Good afternoon, Deb. Thank you so
much.
And that's one of the things when we decided to do this show. I said, well, let me get who knows everybody and anybody, and it's hard for them to say no to. Who can I get that as my co-host? Charlie Crawford.
Good idea.
I said, I don't have to do all this heavy lifting. He could just reach right into the upper echelon of what's going to the big time people. So I really appreciate Charlie for making that easy, and I have admired you.
Yeah, it's always good to have somebody
time.
In the corner doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have admired you for a long time. I listen to your interviews and stuff and the show and all. So we always say the first time is the maiden voyage with CAGDU. So when you come in, we open the door for you. We actually take your coat off, we hang it up for you, we sit you down, we get you a glass of water. But after that, you family. You know, you just get your own tea, you come on in, you sit
down,
you get your own water out the refrigerator. So thank you very much for
joining I will take off my shoes then. And
you get real comfortable.
I like to be comfortable, yeah.
I know y'all people West Coast Washington, but I thought y'all was a little more conservative than that.
State
of Washington. Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome again, and tell us a little bit of about yourself. But one thing, a lot of times in doing talk shows and stuff, we get such a surface of people, but our listener audience want to get to know persons that blind and how to use a guide dog and how the guide dog adjusts their life. But you know about paying bills, so when we hear that music, we get ready to pay a bill, Deb, and then we're going to come back.
All right.
And we're going to go down. Some memory lanes and bringing on up to where we are now. And y'all did a wonderful, wonderful job on the virtual convention. So you're listening to KAGU, the show about your dog and you, and our special guest is Ms. Ed Cook Lewis, and of course we have our co-host Mr. Charlie C, and we're going to be back on the other side to get to know her.
You are listening to KAGU, about your dog and you. KAGU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray, and Charlie Crawford.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back to KAGU, about your dog and you, and we're going to start to drill. I mean, not drill. I mean, talk to our guest, Miss Deb Lewis. We're going to she's going to tell us from the time her daddy looked at her mom and had that twinkle in his eye, and she came about.
I wasn't there yet. I only have heard rumors about that part.
I'm sure you heard about the twinkle in his eye. Okay.
The way I heard it is that my dad looked at my mom and said, "Now what have we done?" So I think it was more like that. I had a great childhood, actually. I'm the oldest of three kids, and I have two younger sisters, and, you know, I always told my parents they should have quit while they were ahead and stopped at one. They kept going, and I grew up in a farming community, which isn't really a farming community anymore. The city came out to them, but at the time, had horses and we had steers with beef cattle, and we had small animals, rabbits and chickens, and of course, you know, dogs and cats. So I always had dogs as pets and that kind of thing. And I'm on my sixth guide dog, and when I got my first one, my mom, who was very much a farm girl, did not really understand why I was bringing it into the house, because we didn't bring dogs into the house unless it was, you know, really cold or they were sick or something, and then you might, you know, bring them in. But basically, dogs belonged outside. And so she's like, what's that dog doing in here, like in your bedroom even yet? Like, what's it doing in here? Do you think it needs to go outside? And she didn't mean just to relieve. She meant to be out there.
Right. So, be outside? Deb, let me ask you this. Your mommy calling you Deb, but let me ask you this. Between the time you grew up in Washington State, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, So what was your childhood like, and was your other two siblings, did they have visual problems?
No, my sisters both have good vision. I think my one sister has eyes in the back of her head, as they say. she spots everything. My other sister, maybe not quite so much. But anyway, but my sisters both are fully sighted, as of my parents were. Actually, the cause of my blindness is not entirely understood or known. They know that it was some kind of nerve damage, but they never were able to actually isolate the cause. So we don't know. I was not rental fibroplasia or whatever they call it, the RLF guys we knew them as, but I was not one of those. But I.
Wait a minute. Come on now. You couldn't be no ordinary blind person. You know, I
had
to
right.
be something special. You know?
That's right. That's right. I had to do it differently. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So let me ask you, what was the interaction with, how did your parents handle it emotionally, and your interaction with your sisters being blind? And are you totally blind? Okay.
Yes.
And how I am now.
I actually had a little bit of vision when I was younger, but I've been totally blind for really several years now. So a long time. And I always, I was a Braille reader and a white cane traveler and things early on. So although I had a little bit of vision, I always operated as a blind person. And
so how did your family accept you? And unfortunately, a lot of time our families are ashamed of us. But how?
Sure.
So how did you fit into the family in terms of?
That's an interesting question because I think my dad was very accepting and very into whatever we needed to do. They talked about things like moving closer to the school for the blind if I was going to need to go to the school for the blind, and it was like 150 miles away. And so my dad was prepared to relocate they didn't end up doing that. But if that's what they needed to do, that's what they were going to do. My mom was always very good about everything. I mean, she, drove me to anything I needed to go to and definitely encouraged me. But my mom really did have difficulty with it. And I wouldn't have said that at the time because my parents did all the right things. But my mom did have difficulty with it. She had difficulty with the word blind, for example, and never used it. And I have no problem with that word, but she did. My dad's never had any problem with it, and my sister's never had any problem with it. But my mom really talked all around it. It bothered her, I think. And my mom was always interested in, finding. She definitely wasn't stopping with anything. I mean, I was going to school. I was doing everything everything. It wasn't like she was like waiting, but her whole thing all the way to her death a couple years ago was that, and she told my sister basically almost as she was dying, if you find something that we can do, about Deb's eyes, then I want you to pay for it no matter what it costs. If she doesn't have the money to do it. And so my sister said, okay, right on, because that's what you say to a dying person, getting into with them. Well, that probably would be a real disaster to do that now, but my sister was like, she said, just need to know that I'm obligated to come around and talk to you about any big scientific development. And I said, okay, fine. But my sisters, my one sister is 2 years younger than I am, and my other sister is 12 years younger. So my relationship with them is different, very different from, with each other. So my sister that is close in age to me, we're not particularly close, although we get along okay. But I think there was a lot of frustration. I mean, she was your typical middle child, so she had all the middle child challenges anyway. And then there was that. And then, but my younger sister and I are actually pretty close, and we are more personality similarly, and we are pretty close. The other thing that happened that was maybe as significant or more significant to my parents about my growing up, other than my blindness, was the fact that when I was 7, I was run over by a truck our yard. In our yard,
and
I'm still here, and I really shouldn't be. So, that's a testimony to the fact that God had another plan for me. I think it was not to be spending it, gone yet. So, but actually, the biggest medical reason why I survived was because I was really young, and my body wasn't, terribly developed yet, and there was. In the opportunity of healing and growing, there was a lot of repair that my body was able to do. But it was very touch and go. And really for several years, my parents spent a lot of time and energy and their money going, back and forth about medical things. And my father didn't have very good insurance in those particular days. And that was a big challenge. So my family, anytime you have something really going on in a family that's, traumatic, I think it makes the family a little more dysfunctional. And so I think that's what kind of happened for my sister in the middle is she spent a lot of her time, you know, kind of having to put up with all that they were having to do for me. And they tried to accommodate her really well, and I think they did, but you know how kids feel about some of those things. And then you're not supposed to resent that because, after all, you don't theoretically want your sister to die, do you? So you can't actually express how you feel about those things, right? So, So I think that's what my parents kind of were going through, perhaps more than being concerned about my being blind, was that now, you know, I was blind and I might have a permanent physical disability, and I might, and I certainly was going to be a lot of trouble for a while. So,
So did you have friends when you was growing up, girlfriends?
Oh, yeah.
How did they interact with you and accept you?
I was very fortunate. I went to public school, and my first couple of years bused or taxied would be the more correct terminology, to a school that was not in our district, that was not far away, where they had a resource room and a resource teacher, and they could give you extra help with, you know, learning Braille and some of that and all that. And so, and that was the first time I ever met any other blind kids, and that was interesting to me. And so I did that for, I was going to do it for 2 years, but because the truck accident occurred in there, ended up doing it for an extra year because we weren't sure. I was homeschooled in that year that I was off from school, and so we were not sure whether I would need to be held back when I came back or not. As it turned out, I wasn't, but we didn't know. So the deal with my home district was that I was going to have completed two full years in the other school, and since I really hadn't done that, I stayed a third year over there. So then I came back to my home school and went to the rest of my elementary school and all of junior high and high school as the only blind kid in the school. And my parents thought that was wonderful. And at the time, I thought it was fine. I mean, it was a lot easier to go to school near home than it was to, you know, go somewhere else. And of course, your friends, if you had them, lived more near you and all that. So, you know, I think in that respect, it was good. But it was really hard because a lot of the time the materials weren't very available. And you know, my mom did a lot of reading and other things happened. And my resource teacher came like twice a week and brailled things for me that I might need or did other things for me, you know, but it was not easy. And I did have a lot of friends, but it was difficult. And I would say that looking back on it, I probably wouldn't recommend it. But at the time, this was what you did. Our school for the blind is a really cool place now, and they do great things with the kids. But when I was going there, it was definitely the Braille jail. And and kids didn't enjoy it, and mostly the kids that went were the kids who either lived close to it or were failing in public school, and neither of those met my definition. You know, we lived 200 miles away, and I was not failing, so I wasn't a really good candidate to go to the school for the blind from the definitions that people used. So.
Okay. I went to Maryland School for the Blind, so I understand.
Uh-huh.
But and your mom did a lot of reading, but she was really doing research on finding the cure for your eyes. You just didn't know.
Well,
it, right?
She was doing that too. I think she was doing that at night, but she did read, you know, materials to me that I needed. And my mom took a Braille class. She was not a good Braillist, but she could Braille something, and that was useful. And she could certainly put Braille labels on something, or, I mean, but she was never a real good Braille. My father took the class, but my dad doesn't have super high literacy, and he discovered that his usefulness in the class was repairing the Braillers. So he stopped learning Braille because that just didn't make any sense for him, like contractions, figuring out where to put, you know, when to put them. And he just, so he learned a little grade one Braille, but he definitely learned how to take a Perkins Brailler apart and put it back together and make it work when it was in back together shape. So he was an invaluable resource to the school district all the way through school. I mean, you know, can you get your dad to repair some more brailers? You know, so, and he, you know, he had a manual on it, and he had parts. He bought parts from Perkins, and you know, and he fixed them. So that was really appreciated by everybody. Yeah, I'm sure that was.
Okay. Well, I think we got about 30 seconds, Ms. Renee, before we go to a break. But let's go into a break now, please, and then we're going to come back on the other side. So you're listening to Sight and Decide. You're listening to CAGD about your dog and you. And our very special guest is Ms. Deb Cook Lewis. And she is going to come back on the other side. And before we have her up again on the microphone, we're going to do our special Charlie's Corner with Mr. Charlie C, bringing information to the DMV. So this is Reverend Ray, your host, and co-host is Mr. Charlie Crawford, and we'll be back on the other side.
We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium food. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have a store-to-door delivery in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. Back over to Charlie and Charlie's Corner.
All righty. Welcome back to CAGDU about your dog and you, CAGDU, Captain Earl, Guide Dog Users, Inc. And we're going to go to Charlie's Corner. And Charlie's Corner has a new sponsor, which is the National Capital Area Chapter. And that chapter is an affiliate of ACB. And that chapter is what they consider in Silver Springs, and they meet every third Thursday of the month physically in a hotel, the Sheraton Park Hotel. But the most important, exciting part about the meeting that chapter, they meet from 7 to 8. They take care of ACV business, and but from 8 on, everybody runs to the bar. Yeah, so they have a good time. But anyway, if you'd like to
learn
more
salad bar,
about,
right?
You like to
do they remember the meeting?
Yeah.
Do they remember the meeting?
Yeah, so if you'd like to know more about the National Capital Area chapter, you can go to CAGDU.org and go down to a tab and push the National Capital Area chapter, and you will see a Mr. Pat Sheehan, that's the current president. He's a handsome. I don't want to say middle aged white man, but he is one handsome white boy, I tell you. So his picture will be there. They'll have all the information about the chapter. But that chapter is a new sponsor of Charlie's Corner, which is Charlie C, bringing you information to the DMV. So, Mr. Charlie, take it away.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. And I was going to start off today saying Charlie's Corner is a very pleasant place to be. But unfortunately, I had a telephone call before this meeting where folks associated with the subject matter of my corner basically had a strategy session to try and figure out what's the best way to move forward on the following problem. Well, imagine if you're a mother or a father with a kid, and you're driving the kid over to the store to do something, and then you go to get out of the car. And wait a minute, the lane that used to exist to get out of the car no longer exists. Now they have this green thing, and it's called a protected bicycle path. And so now you have to try and get out of your car as bicycles whiz by, and your kid has to say stay safe, and when you're crossing that area and both going in and coming out. Well, that's one group of people that are affected by it. Another group of people are the PIP folks who are driving their cars, and they are paraplegics and use wheelchairs, and they need to get the wheelchair out of the car as well as themselves and before crossing over to the store. And all of a sudden now they have the same thing, this green place where all the bicycles and scooters and everything else go. And again, they're placed at risk. A disabled person who can't get around all that easily, and so you need to use Metro Access, the paratransit system. And that paratransit system no longer can take you to the places you used to go, because guess what? They used to be able to have the wheelchair ramp from the van go down to the sidewalk, and you'd be all set. But now you got that green area there for the bicycles, and you can't get off the van anymore. So what are they going to do? Well, they can't take you anywhere, because you just drive around and around and around, and nobody will let you off. And then you're blind, and you're walking down the street, and you want to be able to take a bus. And normally the bus stop was right there and near the shade tree or wherever, and you just waited for a bus to come along, and you got it. Well, now they have this green thing beside the curb. So they no longer can have the bus stop there, because all the bicycles are going there. And so what they do, well, with all their intelligence, they decide to have a floating bus stop, which basically means that they move the bus stop into the street. So you can go find the bus if, A, you can find where the bus stop is, B, cross the green space without getting hit by a bike, and C, be able to find out where you are so that you can properly access the bus. And all of this is brought to you courtesy of somebody in government's vision of how do we help the common person. And forgetting that you're a common person too. So
right.
We got this big problem with government just having all these different programs to enforce what they call Vision Zero, which is by the year 2030 in Montgomery County, they don't want anybody else to die from any car accidents. Well, that's nice of them. That's good. We don't want people to die of car accidents either. But the way they get to doing it is to create all these different transportation systems within the county, and then expect everybody to be happy. Well, unless you consult everybody first and figure out what it is they need to do, you're not necessarily going to have everybody happy. So what's the bottom line? The bottom line is this. Society created sidewalks and streets in order to accommodate people's ability to transport themselves. Unfortunately, the bicyclists now say, well, we want to be able to ride our bikes in the street too, or on the sidewalk. We don't care. We just want to ride them. Well, you know, you've got to think about it a little more than just say, okay, we're going to have bicycle lanes now. So the group that I am involved with right now is talking about, let's try to find a place where the bicyclists can go that doesn't upset everything else. And so that is chapter one of what's going to be a long book, and we'll see what happens. But that's what's going on in Charlie's Corner.
All
it's
right.
Chaos.
Thank you, Charlie. So that's Charlie's Corner, Mr. Charlie C., information about the DMV, and that is brought to you again by the National Capital Area Chapter, and that is a affiliate of ACB that meets the third Thursday at 7 o'clock. But here, because of the pandemic, you know, we're all distancing, especially people. We got the touch and feel and everything, so they definitely don't want us at the hotel. And so they have virtual meetings every Thursday. So to get the information, please just type in the National Capital Area chapter.org, and it will take you to CAGDU's website, and just tab down and hit that button, and it'll take you to that information. So we want to thank the National Capital area chapter. And Mr. Pat Sheen is the president, and just let them know that you heard their advertisement on cap on CAGDU. So Ms. Renee is going to reintroduce our wonderful special guest. And one thing about this show that we always try to cover three things: one, to make sure that we're informative, that we are inspirational, and that we are entertaining. Ms. Renee, introduce our guest.
Well, again, our special guest is Deb Cook Lewis, who wears many hats. There is her VP hat of GDUI, Guide Dog Users International, and her ACB radio host hat, and her Guide Dog for the Blind Alumni Board member hat. And today, we have her sitting on the opposite side of the microphone. She is our guest wearing her guest hat instead of her host hat. So again, Deb, we welcome you back to CAGDU Radio, your dog and you.
I like this hat. This is nice.
So, Deb, let me ask you this as we get into, and I'm glad you like the show because we're on our knees and all praying and pleading that maybe with your influence you can get our show once a month or once every 3 months, 4 months. We'll take anything right now because we're begging to get it on mainstream. So we'll talk offline on that. Hopefully that is good enough to, and exciting enough to have us put on there. Like, I mean, you know, we'll leave a take of what y'all giving right now, Juno, whatever.
Sure.
So anyway, so please, whatever we need to do to make that happen. But Deb, is hyphen Cook Lewis, is that hyphen or that's
no, there's
name,
no hyphen.
Cook, or you're a cook?
No.
Okay.
There's a funny story about that.
Please share.
My maiden name is Cook. My husband's name is Lewis. When I got married, on the advice of a number of people, because we didn't get married until 2007. So it's been only, 13 years. So, So I had most of my career as a single person, and people recommended for a variety of reasons that I keep my, maiden name as my legal name. So I did, but for social purposes, I used his name because I was happy to use it. It wasn't that I kept my name because I wasn't proud of his name. It just made a lot more sense in my world. So I used his name socially. So a few funny things happened. And so I was just going by Lewis. So I was Deb Lewis, and that was fine. Well, there's another Deb Lewis in ACB, and she and I were actually in our last dog class together, which was pretty funny. Oh, that was pretty funny. But anyway, that's not the reason I changed this, although it is part of it, because I wondered how come I was getting so many people from Kentucky friending me on Facebook, and that's when I figured out that they thought I was her. Well, she's a lovely person, but we don't have a lot of things in common other than that we were in the last guide dog class. So when I began to post, people became alarmed because I was very different than they expected. But actually, the real thing that happened that was horrible was that our tax preparer, who knew our story, who knew that I was using my maiden name and that Rick had a different last name, but we were filing a joint tax return, which you can do that way, and that was fine, except that he forgot, and he put us in as Lewis. This caused the IRS to create a new identity of me, and this caused them to decide that Deborah Cook had failed to pay her taxes last year, and I received a big citation from the IRS with threats and everything about the fact that I better file a tax return. So I called my preparer, and he said, oops. And he said, you'll have to call them. I mean, you'll have to do it. He said, I'd be glad to, but they won't let me. You'll have to call them and straighten this out. You'll probably be able to do that. So I was on the phone several hours with the IRS. We were able to get them convinced ultimately with the various papers that I faxed in, et cetera, that I was actually the person and that I had filed my taxes, and that the alias of Deborah Lewis did not exist. So they said, we'll fix that, and thank you for following up. So they fixed it all right. They entered me as Deborah Cook back into the system, and they mistyped or transposed two numbers in my Social Security number, creating a third person. So now this third person had also not paid, filed, and paid taxes this year, and was suspect of other things because they suddenly existed and had not previously existed. And where were they all these years, and how much money did they perhaps owe the IRS? So they came lunging after that person. So I had to call again, and I was on the phone for several more hours, and I had to work my way up the food chain of the IRS all the way to Mr. IRS, I believe his name was. And we finally got it straight. And the guy was really, really nice. And he said, you know, he said, I've always told people who get married later like you did that they should keep their maiden name, you know, in your case, and you should keep that name. And he said, this is partly why, because these mistakes happen. And he said, I'm also going to mention to them that they need to make sure their tax preparers are smart enough to use it on their return. So it was great. It was a great story. But the funniest side piece to that story is that somebody actually introduced me to myself one day in email, and they said, you might really like to meet this person. It was me.
That is interesting. That's the music. We got to go to a quick break. That is funny, funny, funny. You listen to Cag Do about the show about your dog and you. Our special guest is Miss Deb Cook Lewis. We don't know if it's the first, the second, or the third, but we'll get back to that. And I'm your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and my co-host, Mr. Charlie Crawford, which we call Mr. Charlie C. And we'll be back on the other side with this merriment. Miss Renee.
You are listening to CAG Do about your dog and you. Capital Area Guide Dog Dog Guide Users located in the nation's capital. Back over to Charlie C. and Reverend Ray.
All right, and welcome back to CAG Do about the dog and you with our guests, Ms. Deb Lewis 1, 2, and 3. And we're not going to give her like John Wick Chapter 3 that's be coming out in May. But anyway, so we do want to talk about, she really do have a guide dog. So Ben, share with us your experience of getting your first guide dog, where you are now, and how it has assisted you. And you being a radio personality, you can do that in a few minutes.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I have had 6 guide dogs. I'm on my 6th dog. Her name is Praline, like pralines and cream. She looks like a praline. She has that kind of off-whitish color, like a praline. And she's a yellow lab, and she is 6 years old. And 5 of my 6 dogs have been from Guide Dogs for the Blind, some of them from the San Rafael campus and some from Oregon. And my other dog, which was actually my 5th dog, usually your first dog is from another school or maybe your most recent dog, but no, not me. So my 5th dog was from Guide Dogs of America in Sylmar, California. So those are the dogs. And I got my first one in 1972. And usually I'm the person who's had dogs the longest in my conversation. So it's kind of fun talking to you guys and not being that, you know, I'm baby guide dog user. My first one was in 1972. I was in college. And so that was kind of a wild, you know, kind of time to be getting a guide dog. I do remember that Guide Dogs for the Blind had an item on their form which said that you would not work your dog under the influence. And so I said, I said, I promise and swear that my dog will have never been drinking when we are working.
That's a good one.
And, they don't actually have, I mean, their form that you sign about these things is much better these days. But I do remember that line. I'm like, holy crow. Now, how are they going to know? They're 800 miles away. And my father said, well, they probably have some little chip embedded in the dog. Oh, boy.
His alcohol level is 2 point.
Right. The dog does a breathalyzer for you. Yeah. So,
what was your experience when you went and got your first dog? What was your experience?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I had always had dogs, and I shared – you know, back at the beginning, the thing about my mom and dogs in the house and all. So that was kind of a big deal for my family. But, you know, I was a very independent traveler. I had no plans to go get a guide dog, but I was on the college campus and we were having a lot of difficulty. It was kind of a wooded campus, very nice, you know, and we were having a big problem with people being molested. And I was a music major, and I had to go out. I was an organ music major, and you don't have those in your room, you know, the pipe organs. You can't, like, buy one and stick it in your dorm. And so this meant that I had to go to – they had several on the campus. I mean, this was a school that did a lot with music. And so they had a lot of them on the campus. They had maybe 5 or 6. And so you signed up for a time and you went and practiced, you know, in the practice time you signed up for. And you worked them around your schedule and you, you know, all that. So that was fine, but it meant that you needed to do some of this at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. I mean, if you could be nocturnal enough to manage it and all that, or 6 in the morning, if that was the way you preferred to work, you know. So you had to sign up for some odd time. There just was no way you could have all of yours in prime time. And so the big problem was that they were asking all of us to be accompanied by somebody when we went out at night or really early in the morning, because there was a problem, and it was very real. And so, you know, people were jumping out the bushes at you, and it was a problem. So it was annoying to me. I mean, here was my independence finally, you know, and now I'm supposed to get somebody to go with me to the practices. And this wasn't about being blind. I mean, they wanted everybody to do this. And I thought, no, this is not going to work. I'm going to get a guide dog, and then they're going to leave me alone. So that's exactly what I did. So it was for all of the wrong reasons. And it turned out that I really, really, you know, enjoyed having the dog and working the dog and using the dog for all the reasons you guys already talked about. But my reason to get one was totally about self-defense, and I wanted a dog that went grrr. So, you know, and he actually did. He was kind of a formidable dog, but they didn't give him to me for his formidable nature. They actually gave him to me at his – he was a bigger dog. They gave him to me because I had some balance problems related to the accident that I talked about earlier. And so they thought he might be helpful for that. Well, my dog is really small now because the cars are not big enough for the dog I had the first time. But, you know, that was a very great experience for me, and I ended up really, really liking it. But I absolutely went for the wrong reasons, and probably a school wouldn't even give me a dog today if I, you know, stated my reasons, you know.
Right. Well, you know, Dad, we are so up against the clock here. Life is so fascinating, and we're going to ask you if you would indulge us. And please, we would like to have you come back again so you can talk to us about your professional life as well as your life with ACB and the wonderful convention that you all put together. So we're going to schedule you to come back again if you don't mind at all.
That'd be great.
Okay, and like I said, you know, I'm going to take the privilege of being totally unabashed and ask you about how we can stick our show on a mainstream or something. So Charlie, do you have a question for Deb before you have to jump off and we have to say proper goodbyes to Deb?
Well, all I can say is that I never realized this woman had so much talent and so many different experiences and really ought to be president of ACB.
Oh, no, no, no. I have no aspiration for this, Charlie. Yeah. And you better stop right there. Now,
well,
it's too political.
Can't be manager.
Oh, no, I don't want to be. I don't need that level of politics, actually.
Right.
I think Dan is doing. Dan Spoon is doing a wonderful job for the organization as president.
I agree with that.
And I really admire. I really do admire what he's bringing to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean,
and can we tell people who the organization is? Because we're dancing around it.
And about the radio show.
American Council of the Blind. So we're talking about the president of the American Council of the Blind, which is the national organization that the CAGDU and the Capital Area Chapter of ACB all are part of, and I'm part of out here. And so, yes, and Charlie, the idea is absolutely off the table. I actually can't even run for the board because of the rules that ACB has about board numbers of board members from each state. So once I'm done with the Board of Publications, I may be done.
I don't think you'll ever be done, Debbie.
So Deb, please leave us with some nuggets of wisdom.
I have no nuggets of wisdom. My big nugget of wisdom is to basically stay out of the way of anything that looks like work. I am enjoying retirement so much. I always thought I never would retire, but I love retirement and I recommend it to everybody. Just retire right now.
Work yourself out of a job, huh? Well,
yes,
there,
right,
well,
absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's been a delight, and our producer is going to touch base with you so we can have you on again so we can do Chapter 2, and we'll do Deb 2, and then we'll do Chapter 3, and we'll do Deb 3. Okay? So thank you so, so much, and God bless you and your family, and be safe.
Thank you so much.
All righty. So that's another wrap, Mr. Charlie C. And you got to jump off and get on another line, right, Charlie?
Right.
Okay, I think you got. Okay, all right, Charlie C. So until next time, this is CAGDU, the show about your dog and you. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and my co-host is Charlie Crawford, which we finally call Charlie C. And we want to thank again our very special guest, Ms. Deb Cook, No Hyphens Lewis, 1, 2, or 3, depends on what you put in on the or on the website or the email or whatever. But she's going to be our guest again, and we want to thank her so, so much for being such a good sport. And again, as we always like to close the show and say, hug your honey, but pet your pup. God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, Capital Area Dog Guide Users located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's CAGDU, CAGDU 2020@gmail.com, or give us a call at 301-263-7371. That's 301-263-7371. See you next Friday.